Okay, hello everybody. Welcome back. Just to remind you all that if you're smoking outside, there's buckets for your butts. There's a fire exit at the end of the build there, and the loos are just out that back door and round the corner. Okay, well, big welcome to Jack, and could you start us off again by reading the preamble, please?
Thanks. A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Jack. A big welcome to Jack, whose home group is Tuesday lunchtime, Ascot. And I was speaking to you earlier, and you told me that Big Jim C was the first old-timer you came across. And your first meeting attended was Drill Hall in Dunbarton. Yeah, lovely. Right, I'll hand over to you now.
Unfortunately, as you're aware, my name's Jack and I'm an alcoholic. I hope to goodness I'm able to communicate. I think Robert kind of broke the thing that you're back, that you're well able to understand the Scottishisms. But I'll try hard to speak in English as best I possibly can. The story of my life really is when you become an old timer, that means exactly what it is, you're old. The time's slipped by and you're pretty well gone, but I was fortunate enough to find this fellowship fairly early into my life. My life started in a small village south of Glasgow, and there was a power in my life then. I think probably my father, really, if he was there, he felt secure and things were... He was the only power that I was ever aware of, you know, as a young lad. And he was called into the army at the outbreak of war. And I was 7 years of age, and I remember him... I remember him telling me that I was the man of the family at 7 years of age, and it was my job to look after the twins and my mother. And we lost them. There's so many kids at that time lost their fathers. They were way into the army. And for me, there was a bit of change. I felt insecure, and from that, right through my whole life, there was an ache for something. There was a hunger and need for something that was missing that I couldn't for the world of me tell you what was missing. And we were left with a wee lady who had grown up in a mining community in Lanarkshire, and she'd grown up in an alcoholic family. Both of my grandparents, I would think, were both alcoholics. And she was the second oldest in this family. And whatever happened to my mother, I don't know, but all the girls in that family grew up hating alcohol. You know, they would have poured it all down the drain. And my mother hated alcohol, but tragically, whatever had happened in her childhood, she had all the characteristics of an alcoholic. She had quite savage temper, and unfortunately, over a period of time, I was to develop the characteristics that I didn't like about my mother. Totally unaware of it, I'd inherited each and every one of them, you know, and they were to follow me through my life until such times I had the good fortune to get here, you know. My father came home when I was 14 years of age. He came home to a strong-willed boy that he couldn't be told anything. I know all, you know, and a fairly strong-willed. And I'd spent my life as a kid in boxing rings and things, and the last thing in life he wanted for me was boxing rings, you know. But it had become so much a part of my life. I was a young lad up till I was 14. But he prevailed on me, you know, and when I was 16 years of age, I eventually gave boxing up. But at 16 years of age was the time when I was first introduced to alcohol. Having grown up in a home, there was no alcohol. There was a bit of alcoholism, the characteristics of alcoholism, but nobody, my mother wouldn't take a drink. But she still, I believe, that wee soul was an alcoholic, you know. She had the characteristics of an alcoholic anyway. And I inherited them. And I remember feeling guilty, getting to a pub. We were all going to a dance in Shawlands. And the boys that I was with were the same age as me, but they'd previously been in the pub. Scottish pubs back then were, I would say possibly, they were just men's drinking dens. You couldn't see into them. As children, the windows were all blackened out. And all your life, you wondered what went on in the back of those doors, you know. I was about to find out, you know, and I went in. I remember feeling guilty. I hope to God nobody sees me in here and get back and says to my mother that, you know, I seen Jack in a pub and things like that. And I remember that night, and I think the boys that were with me who were more familiar with booze or the taking of booze than I was, thought the best thing for me to have was a Rambuie. It was quite easy to take, you know, and I wouldn't be. But I was to grow from that and become a great kind of consumer of whiskey. I enjoyed whiskey, you know, in my early years, and indeed most of my years of drinking. And that night, I met a guy I had never met before. It gave me so much confidence and such a feeling of well-being. But I was doing things that were totally out of character, you know. And I remember where I had felt great the night before, I woke up in the morning with a feeling of shame and guilt and conscious and aware of the things I'd been doing the night before. But it didn't stop me drinking. And I started something at that time by saying to myself, you know, that I'll change. I was always going to change. Later years in life, after about 20 years of drinking, I was still saying to myself in the shade in the mirror, tonight I'm going to behave myself. Tonight I'm going to make changes. And like most kids of my generation, each and every one of us had to get into the army to do national service, you know, and my turn come as well. And my father, and it had been family tradition that they would serve in the Brigade of Guards, you know, so I found myself put into the Scots Guards, no big choice. I think they were aware of your family history, and that's what happened. And I remember when I went into the army, the fact I'd given up boxing, but they're still aware of me, the fact I had been a fairly competent boxer. They made it clear to me that if I was prepared to box, life would be kind, you know, and it was kind. As a national serviceman, I was a sergeant physical training instructor in the Scots Guards when I was 19 years of age, you know. And when I reflect back on it, part of my alcoholism, you know, all my life, wherever I was, I felt like a square peg in a round hole. I didn't feel comfortable in any situation I was ever in. I remember as a wee boy getting into boxing rings, and I was terrified. And I wasn't terrified of the guy in the other corner. I was terrified of this crowd of people sitting round outside the ring. You know, it's that painful shyness. And once it started going, I could perform quite well. I could stand there bagging airs before that bell went. And that never left me. You know, in the army, you know, if you're going up through the ranks, as Robert knows, you do cadre courses. We're in front of squads of men, giving them instructions, and words of command, and that's why I love PT. PT was a thing that you give them a demonstration of how to do it, and then took them through the whole class through it, and I loved that, and I was to spend the greater part of my army life in gymnasiums, and I enjoyed that. It was a lovely thing to do. And I was listening to Robert there. I remember RSM when I was a kind of senior sergeant coming home to get them up. One of the fortunate things, I went back then, I was 3 years in the Middle East. We spent 6 months in Cyprus, which again was an alcoholic paradise. You know, you could, wine and drink was cheap, you know, and you could, it was, as I say, an alcoholic's paradise. And we went from there to Egypt, and we were actually billeted in a camp in Port Said called Gulf Coast Camp, Port Said. And I was to be there nearly 2.5 years before we come home. And as I say, the army was kind to me. I've nothing much to complain about, but you know, and any time I was in an embarrassing situation, it was drink related. I remember as a young kid, before I was promoted, probably at the guard room for being drunk and disorderly and throwing fire buckets about anybody to come near me, you know. And they took me out the guard room in the morning because we were in the box of the Navy in Port Said Harbour, you know, and never back in there. And indeed, never in my drinking career was I ever, ever back in locked up in a cell of any kind. Tell my wife that, and she says I should have been. You know, the times I should have been. I remember when I come along to this fellowship initially, there was a big guy, this big guy and I had served in the same regiment. No, at different times, obviously. And Sandy, I was his boss in the job. And I took him out for a drink the first night I arrived. And he was the first guy ever to say to me, "Jack, you have all the characteristics of an alcoholic." And I thought, who the hell is he to tell me I'm an alcoholic? You know, that he was right and I was wrong. I knew for the simple reason that Sunday was one, you know. But back a wee bit, I'm going to wait too quick. Back a bit, I had the good fortune in 1953 to get home for the duration of the coronation. Every battalion of Brigade of Guards had a marching party of 100 men. And I was one of the fortunates that was allowed home. And talk about resentment and how resentments can last. My young brother eventually joined me in the army and he came to the battalion I was in. And we both were young sergeants of the Scots Guards. He was only a National Stairsman. He was a very fine soldier. I was just primarily fairly competent at boxing ring. And Billy and I were sitting in a tent one day and he was telling me about when I went away to the army, all the tough guys running about this village gave him and my other young brother a hard time. And I registered in my mind that I would sort that out when I got home. Do you know that resentment was inside me for the better part of a year? And I come home the coronation, and my other young brother was still at home, now he went for a drink, we come back. And the places in this village where we grew up, where everyone met, was the British Legion Club, you know. And I remember going in, and this guy, this top of the hard guy, says, "Jack, it's nice to see you," and I give him a right hand through the middle, you know, and I felt so guilty. I lifted my head and I found the lady at the back sitting there, you know, and often thought to myself, when I get married, she knew well before she got me how I behaved and the things I would do. As I say, we were home then, we did a troop of the colour, straight line, we did the coronation, and then we were onto a plane and straight back to Fayed, you know, weren't allowed to get back home. And the army, as I say, enjoyed it, but at the time, I wearied to be home, you know, and I mean, a desert place is not a place to be if you had grown up. My background as a child was a farm. And it's strange to say, there's something odd about a wee boy that's more comfortable away with a horse and a dog than he is mixing with his own kind, you know. I used to come into the village and there was an unease. There was a disquiet of some kind because there was other kids there my age, you know, and it kind of brought in a kind of feeling of competition into my life, you know. And That was to stay with me for years. No, the greater part of my life, my drinking life, I was searching for something and hadn't a clue what I was looking for. There was an ache and a hunger inside me, and I didn't know what I was looking for. And I was very, very conscious for the first time I had taken drink that my behaviour was bad, it was dreadful. And I woke up in the morning guilty and ashamed of some of the things I'd been doing. And never quite, as I said already, that I used to promise myself every night the Jack would change. My father used to say I was the greatest going to do. I was always going to do something, but never quite get around to it, you know. And that was the story of my life prior to coming here. But I was in the golf industry. When I came out of the army, I walked into the police. I was just what the police were wanting. They were wanting a young physical training instructor, some physical training instructors in the army. No problem, I walked into the police. They didn't know, and I didn't know, they were taking on an alcoholic with all the emotional insecurity that alcoholics have. And my behaviour, my alcoholic behaviour, no drinking behaviour, my alcoholic behaviour, eventually I lost me the job. I mean, if somebody gave me a hard time, I gave them a hard time back, you know, and that's not what young policemen are supposed to do, not indeed. It's eventually, I remember when the chief constable let me go, he says, McMillan, he says, when I was your age, the things you're doing is a qualification for promotion. He says, no, today. You know, I come out and I was a complete and utter loss. In 1955, Rita and I got married, you know, so that makes us 60 years married this year. So in July this year, we'll be 60 years married. And I was a jack of all trades from then on. And, you know, the golf course had been my background. It had been my background when I came out of school as a kid. And we were a complete and utter loss. Back then, for young couples to get a home to live in, it was the easiest thing in the world to take a job with a home attached, you know. And I cut wood for about 4 years. I felled wood and hauled it home, sawmilled it for a good number of years. And then a guy got in touch with me. There was a job going, looking after a golf course in Elderslie. An old boss of mine's, Tom Dodson, a great old Scottish golfer, says, Jack, would you come back to the golf course, you know, and with his help, I get the position as a golf course manager at Elderslie Golf Club. And so that was me back into golf, which from then until I retired at 79 years of age, I've just been deeply involved in golf courses. And we stayed there. I was better paid, a wee bit more comfortable. By that time, when we moved to Elderslie, we had three children. We had Stuart and the twins, and a typical nomad, as alcoholics are. We had three kids born in Ayrshire, two born in Renfrewshire, and one born in Dumbartonshire. And the one in Dumbartonshire was born on Christmas Day, of all things. And but as I say, we were there, we were at Elderslie, we were better off. Early years of our marriage, prior to going to Elderslie, I didn't drink much. Because in simple terms, I didn't earn enough to provide for my kids, and we were trying to build a home. And I didn't, I had my off day. Once or twice a year, I'd go and get stoned. You know, but it was rare occasions. Simple terms, because I couldn't afford it. Went to Elderslie, they were a wee bit financially better off. And I started to slide back into old habits that I'd had in the army. Spending a great deal more time in the pub than probably I should have done. I never wanted to be an alcoholic. But it just seemed to me natural to head into a pub, you know, and I developed an awful lot of kind of bad things after that. That I spent a great deal of my life up until, and indeed right up until I stopped drinking. I was a, wherever I went, my reputation went before me. and I was a useless Tuppenny Halfpenny Odd Man that was employed to throw guys out of pub, when it was really me that should have been thrown out of the pub. You know, it was my job to see that they behaved themselves. And he came with that number, you know, that should really have been me that was thrown out. And I did that right up until I found my way to this fellowship. I come to this fellowship. I was playing golf at Pollock Golf Club in Glasgow, and it was a 36-hole event. And being me, I played the first 18 holes. Get into the bar at lunchtime, and any thought of playing the second 18 holes went out the window. And before the night was out, I broke a big guy's jaw and didn't know anything about it. I'm sitting here today and I couldn't tell you what caused the confrontation, and indeed why it came about. There's a lovely story attached to this that happened. I remember when I come out, and this was instrumental in me coming to AA. I wrote him a letter and apologised and told him I had a problem with drink. I never heard back, you know, that was... when you break somebody's jaw, they don't necessarily want to write you and say sorry, you know, or thank you for doing it, you know. But I woke up in the morning terrified, because golf industry is a fairly incestuous industry, and it just goes round the whole country what had happened in bad behaviour. And this big guy that was his boss, ex-Scots Guardsman, who was in AA, eventually was instrumental in me in 1966 coming to this fellowship. I come along, and a lovely wee guy from Ellensborough picked me up at my garden gate, took me to meetings, and he dropped me off at my garden gate. And never once over that period did I make any effort, my own part, to get to an AA meeting. That wee soul took me, it was a lovely car, it was to 12-step me twice. And Alec was a lovely character who, I'll tell you a story about this man, the golf man. Years and years later, when I was sober, I got a lovely letter. He says, Jack, I see your golf course on television. And he says, it's a joy to see. I treasure that letter, you know. That was the big guy, I broke his jaw. You know, and I thought to myself, that's making amends. That's feeling a wee bit cleaner than... You know, when I come along here in the mid-60s, I felt so tatty and ashamed of the people that hurt my life, you know. You couldn't get into a shower and wash it off. You know, I had to find this program of recovery to start to feel at peace with myself, clean inside, you know. The story of me coming along here in 66 was that I began to get... There's nobody discussed this program of recovery. The West of Scotland message at that particular time, I heard Robert talking about me, Market Bobby, and all these guys, Teacher Bill, you know, these were all guys that were still there when I arrived. And some of them were sharing experience, but in general terms, if you mentioned the word God, they'll know HP punter up there will get me sober. I'll stay away for a drink a day at a time and I'll not get drunk. Well, that didn't happen to me, and then the result was I went out to prove to myself that I wasn't an alcoholic. I remember one Thursday coming home and saying to Rita, see, I'm not an alcoholic. I've had a couple of Irish whiskies, I've money in my pocket, the pub's open, and I'm home. I'd physically ejected myself to go home, you know, at that pub. Didn't go home the next night. And that was the pattern of it. It just never ever changed after that. And I was to drink again before I come back here 46 years ago. And then soon years before I had been out, the fellowship had grown to such a degree that they were actually discussing programs of recovery, and there was people there. When I come to fellowship initially, there was one lady member in the Vale of Leven. Now, There's as many women as men, and sometimes more, you know. You go to some of the meetings up there and it's like a hen party. But the lovely thing is the changes were dramatic. And I was conscious. I remember going to a meeting in Dumbarton, the Royal Hall, one night. And it was a time when there was no lights, there was candles on the tables and that. And there was a guy's down the right-hand side, smoking and relaxed, and their legs crossed and at peace with themselves. And down the left-hand side, there was twisted guys like me that could find fault with anything and stick their nose into things that didn't concern them, you know. And that was one of my characteristics. But I looked down this side and I thought, they have got something I want. And these are the guys that were talking about recovery. And I heard about a big guy, Jim C. to Kilmarnock, and I hadn't a clue who Jim C. was, you know. You don't know their second names now. And he came to Dumbarton one time to share his experience. And him and I had boxed at the same time as kids and young men, you know. And I knew him. And what a lovely example he was, you know. It impressed me just seeing him, you know. Jim at that time was 9 years old. You know, he was a lovely character. And I remember, I'm jumping ahead a wee bit here, because actually what happened, the major turning point in my sobriety was that Concrete Bobby arrived at my door one Saturday morning. Come on, we're going to Inverness, he says, to a convention. And I thought to myself, I've got enough money in my pocket to go to Inverness. 3 months over. And all the way up the A82 to Inverness, I was concerned if I'd be able to pay the hotel and that. And I said to my oldest son, tell your mum I'm away to an AA convention. And I thought she'll probably think I'm away in the booze again, you know. But we got to, and it was lovely. We got up to Drumna Rocket in the corner of Loch Ness. And I was still kind of very much, I wasn't good at going up to someone and saying, my name is Jack, I'm an alcoholic. And I was kind of standing back in the crowd. I wasn't long enough about the fellowship to have the courage to do that. And I remember it was another known member who was at this open meeting, come and spoke to me about Rita, you know, and it gave me the confidence to sit down quietly and listen to what was being said. And the guy who was sharing his experience was a big ex-sea captain who retired, who from time to time took a ship to sea. I remember Big Norman Fiskay saying that in this occasion they were taking this ship to sea, and it was a dodgy load, dodgy old ship and a dodgy sea. He says there were 3 AA members aboard, and they hadn't a care in the world. They left it to the big fella. I remember thinking, who's the big fella? I've been looking for him all my life, you know. And that would set me off starting to become involved in this fellowship, started to sit and listen to the guys who were talking about recovery. And there's a lot of lovely people. There was 4 of us kind of get sober at the same time. Billy, a couple of Tuppenny Hard Men, and a guy that couldn't stay out of jail. I wouldn't have wanted Billy's company when he was drinking, nor indeed would he have wanted mine's, you know. But he was a great example to me in sobriety. Billy had 3 children. They had never been home when anyone was born because of drinking. I'd flung him out of pubs at different times, you know. And Neil was, you see, Neil's a con man, you know, but he was an alcoholic con man. And before then, Big Walter and I had an awful lot in common, and we formed a friendship, you know. And Billy was 22 years sober when he died. That was the guy that couldn't stay out of prison. Never back in prison. Richard and I went up to his funeral and the police were directing the traffic. Walter died. You know, the funny thing about it, we come after about 5 years of sobriety, In 1984, we moved south with six children. It was a big adventure. You know, it was a big thought to uproot six children from home and come way down here. But we did come down. And the people in the Vale of Leven who knew I was going south had made contact with somebody in Enfield to make sure that somebody was there to ensure I went to any meeting. And the first night, a lovely soul, Michael H. in North London. Michael picked me up and took me to Muswell Hill that night. And halfway there, his car ran out of fuel. He says to me, Jack, I'm a garage proprietor, you know. And he hadn't got halfway to Muswell Hill to go in and get a can full of fuel to fill. He just picked up the first car in the forecourt, I think. And that lovely soul and I become great friends over the time I was in North London. And even after we moved south of the Thames. And I was looking after a golf course in North London, and then I don't know why, but I looked and come south. But while I was in North London, I must share this with you. When I was in North London, I'd never been to an intergroup meeting. But I remember a lovely soul, Cathy, her husband was Scottish, and he was a ship's captain as well. And they were both members of this fellowship. And Cathy invited me along. It was the big London intergroup burst up into four, north, south, east and west. And this was the first meeting in the North London intergroup. And I went along there, and I'm going to tell you the truth here, I never opened my mouth. And before I come out, I was prison liaison officer at Pentonville Prison. I was the representative of the intergroup at the General Service Conference for 3 years. And I was vice chairman of the intergroup, and I hadn't said a word. But it was the loveliest thing that ever happened. It took me, I went to a General Service Conference for the first time, I had never read the traditions. So in simple terms, I was there when I should have been there. But it made me aware that if you're going to be involved in this fellowship and service of any kind, you've got to know the working things of the traditions. You know, and the second 2 years that I attended the General Service Conference, I had made myself aware of the traditions and the importance of them in our life and our sobriety. And it was a lovely, rich experience. My suggestion to anybody thinking about it, if the opportunity arises to get allow you to get involved, there's a lovely old friend, I was telling you, Michael H. in North London, and Michael used to say, the more you dig, the more gold you find. And any service I ever did in this fellowship, it was me who knew the benefit. It's a lovely opportunity, and I buried myself in the fellowship for 12 years from coming south here. Then I thought to myself, I was fed up listening to myself talking. I thought to myself, a lot of young fellows here that can do this job and do it well, and I kind of slid away out of the service at that particular time. I suppose probably everything that we have as a family. I told you after this thing, visit to Inverness, I asked this big guy, the Kilmarnock, if he would be my sponsor. And I remember him saying to me, he says, Jack, the understanding is, he says, that I tell you the things you need to hear and not the things you want to hear. And that's how that relationship lasted. And he died with Hodgkin's disease some 4 or 5 years after I had him. And we had moved south, and that big soul, the first year I come down, come with Rita and I to a convention in Chelsea. And he went away up home, and big Walter phoned me one day, he says, Jack, Jim's no well. He had Hodgkin's disease, and he had been given 2 years to live. And he did other things. He got to America and visited an awful lot of his friends in the fellowship. A month before he died, he and his wife, he phoned one day and said, Jack, Maura and I would like to come and spend some time with you and Rita. And he came down here just a month before he died. And I remember him saying to him, he says, Noel, no. Nobody's come back to tell us, he says, Noel, no. this big guy had a lovely faith. It was such a lovely example to me. I used to phone him. I heard Robert talking about this and the politics going on, and I used to sit at meetings, I used to talk to him about guys I didn't particularly like, and how I would stick my nose into their affairs and change things. And he says to me, "Jack, if you had a good look at Jack the day, who the hell was that to point my finger at him, you know, having had a good look at me?" You know, that's the magic of this fellowship. We're all so many and varied, and yet we share the one thing in common, that we're alcoholics. And we're going to be alcoholics to the day we die. Am I going over my time here?
No, you've got 20 more minutes.
Just about finished?
20 more minutes.
20 minutes, oh my God.
Bad luck.
But I think Rita would say that really, I remember we meet Mark at Bobby's saying, he called Bobby Smiler. And apparently somebody had phoned in the when he had Betty pinned up against the wall. And he picked up the phone and Smiler turned out, you know, the wee monster that was there. And apparently as he was down the stairs to go to the A meeting, she shouted after him, "Hey, Smiler," you know. But he'd been giving her a hard time prior to that. And I can share some experience quite similar in my own life, you know. Rita would maybe tell you about the best thing to know how sober you are is ask your wife, you know. That I had a lovely experience with my children, were all kids when I come to this fellowship. And I know without question I was a better dad to my children, you know, after I come to the fellowship and get sober. I'd like to think I was a better husband to Rita after I come to this fellowship. Must have been, for she's put up with me for 60 years. So I can't complain, you know. And it's been 60 good years. Early into our marriage, I had come to this fellowship, albeit with six children. I come to this fellowship, thank God I got here. And I mean, thank God. And I found I remember saying to Rita, when this spiritual hunger and ache was going on inside me, I got to a stage in life that I was reading everything with a spiritual background, you know, even fictitious stories with spiritual background. It was just a hunger in me for something that was totally and utterly new to me. But what a change it's made in my life. I'm an old man, I'm well into, that's the thing about an old time, the other old guy. And I'm 83 and the sober years have been great years. I've lived that life as a child. I've lived the years as an alcoholic. And I come here and had the good fortune to come here. And I've lived 46 years. And to me, really, coming to this fellowship and starting, it's like a child learning to live. It's like a child, like a wee boy living in this man's frame for the first time in his life started to grow up and accept things as an adult and try and behave as an adult. And it's been one of the lovely, most enriching experiences of my life. And it's thanks to all you guys. It's thanks to all. The place where I found it was in the rooms where the ex-drunks meet. And I found the secret of living. I found the keys of the kingdom. And I have an awful lot to be grateful for. And thank God I found this. Thank God I found this life of it. The golf world has been kind to me. I remember one time applying for an awful good job. There was a time the golf industry would have been glad to see the back of me, you know, because of my bad behaviour, my alcoholic behaviour. Even when I wasn't drinking, you know, that industry has given me a lifetime achievement award. And the industry got me award an MBE. I got my wife a visit to Buckingham Palace. To be an industry that previously would have done anything, you know, to get rid of me because of an embarrassment to her. And I remember one time in Sibra, I handled interviews fairly well. In the old days, I used to have two large whiskies if I was going to be interviewed for anything. And I remember applying for a job, a fairly good job, one of the top jobs in the golf course industry. And that day, I wouldn't have given me an apprentice's job. I just didn't handle the interview well. And I came out slightly disappointed and wondered what I'd done wrong. There was a better job around the corner. A couple of months later, I was invited for one of the best jobs in the country, and I did that. And my life is, golf's taken Rita and I all around the world. We've travelled in the last 25 years of my working life. I worked with PGA European Tour setting up golf courses in tournament condition golf courses all over Europe. I built golf courses in Moscow. When I was 76, I was flying to Moscow to build golf courses. An old man, out the name of God, I was pulling my feet out of mud with Wellington boots on and leaving the Wellington boots in there. And I phoned Nicholas, I emailed Nicholas and I said, got a young man to do this, and I got a lovely email back. He says, Jack, we're obviously disappointed, but if I can do what you're doing at your age, he says, I'll be quite pleased. I've had a great life, and it's thanks to the guys sitting in these rooms, and I've played that on far too long. It's just nice to be here, and it's nice to be sober.
Thank you, Jack. That was wonderful. Honour to hear. Just before lunch, can we practice Tradition 7, please? We are self-supporting and not charging an entry fee this weekend. Are we going to pass the... Or are we going to just... I don't know what they want to do. They keep... Yeah, no, I don't know what they want, what they've organised. Thank you, everyone. Can you join me in the Serenity Prayer, please, using the word God, as you understand? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Okay. Thank you. And.